Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 107 of Season 5 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Dave Pallas of 5 Minutes of Mystery. Welcome back, Dave.
I'm going to have to handle this myself.
Well, you're the only man who can do it. So.
First thing I'm going to do, I'm going to shoot that wing with all my bullets. So that's the first thing I'm doing.
Yeah, of course. So yesterday, so minute 107 begins with Esperanza cursing and ends with Grant going down for the count. So we ended things yesterday with John landing on the wing of this huge 747 in the middle of this blizzard. And he then decides that he's going to take off his jacket because apparently he's sweating and it's very hot, and, you know, find a place to store it. And, you know, there's this little area which it'll fit perfectly in. And he just like jams it in the aileron right there, and it works. So, you know, and, you know, the end of yesterday's minute, Esperanza notices something. We're not yet sure what, and we'll find that out today. So Esperanza apparently notices right away that it is John, and he screams, mierda. Okay, do you know any Spanish?
A little, and also I'm pretty certain that's just like code for like and or damn it, because I feel like that's when it's mostly used.
Right, yeah, well, I looked it up, and
cursing it... Cursing the situation that you're in?
Right, well, when I looked it up, it means, you know, that's what it is. It is a noun that means, but there are other phrases that... that it could also mean go f*** yourself or f*** or something like that. So, you know, it depends on the the way you want to translate it. I don't know Spanish. So, you know, anyone out there who knows Spanish who can enlighten us a little more, you know, is this just a normal colorful metaphor that you can use for anything? Or is it something specific? I don't know.
Imagine Carmine Lorenzo with a nice Spanish dictionary. He gets like, because he's like using the same 5 words of McClane for most of the movie. So imagine he's got a Spanish dictionary. Hold on, McClane, I'm going to curse you off real good, you merda. You know,
I don't think he even needs to. I think he does a good enough job. He does a good enough job in English. I don't think he needs to try and find another language to start doing it. And then I love Stuart's response to it, because Stuart turns to him and goes, "What?" Is he saying what just happened, or is he saying what did you just say? You know, which is it? are you cursing, or did something what happened?
Yeah, I think it's him being like, it's a what now? Because yeah, exactly. I mean, the fact that he's looking outside. I think is when he's the side eye that, because he knows that there are some unresolved things. He knows McClane's been in his side the whole time. Like he's been taking.
What do you mean? He thinks McClane's dead because he shot him on the snowmobile that you know did the evil Knievel jump over the truck and explode.
Yeah, but
he doesn't know John's alive.
You know. But yeah, but after he saw the he's like, oh, I'll get him in the cockpit. And he takes off the air, you know, in the jet. You're right. He saw, he goes, oh, he's lucky on that one. And then he goes, oh, you know, he really got him with the jet, or the end of the jet, the ski, we call it the jet ski.
Snowmobile.
But like, I feel like back of Colonel Stewart's head, he's like, well, what if? And he's thinking about that. He's keeping it to himself. He's like, well, Major Grant's here. Like, Major Grant didn't see anything. Like, he's probably, hey, it's all good. You know, he hasn't heard anything that from the airport tower. So he probably, but the back of his head, he's like, well, what if McClane isn't? And he's just like, back of his head, he's like, but what if? And so I think when he hears that, I think that little noise in the back of his head got a little louder. And he's like, no. You can't be serious.
You can't what still is, be alive.
That's
yeah, that's true. But he doesn't yet know that it's McClane. You know, and then Esperanza answers his question and basically says, there's something wrong. The ailerons. We can't take off. And then he looks out the window and goes, Hijo de puta. It's McClane again. So I looked that up also, and that basically means son of a whore. That's you know, I think in a lot of movies you'll hear someone calling someone else a puta or whatever. But you know, yeah. I had to look up that hijo de means son of a. So you know, makes sense. You know, he likes to swear in Spanish. Isn't Franco Nero like Italian though? Or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Yes, he's Italian. Yeah, he's Italian playing Spanish, yeah.
He's Italian who knows how to swear in Spanish.
Look, it's one of these things now where, like, we look back and we go, yeah, we kind of, like, put a white actor in this role. I mean, we put a Scottish actor, John Rhys-Davies, as an Egyptian, you know, digger.
And a dwarf.
Raiders. And as a dwarf. Dwarf is like closer to Scottish stuff because we're like, well, it's fantasy and he's Scottish. We're like, it's Tolkien world. It's allowed. It's like, it's one of those, like, when he shows up in Indiana Jones 5, we're like, okay, that's the last grandfathered in time we do this.
That's right.
We promise after this, we won't put European actors into other European roles. We promise.
Maybe yes, maybe no. We'll just have to wait and see. We'll see what they do if they decide to make another one. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a good point. You definitely make a good point with that. And at this point, Stewart starts losing his cool and he goes, son of a bitch. And I like the fact that at that point, Grant is the one who volunteers and goes, I'll do him. Meaning, you know,
well, yeah, you know, I was thinking about that. Like, it's that, I think the reason Grant goes first and the reason Stewart follows, and they don't even tell their guys, is two things. One, Colonel Stewart's men have died several times trying to fight McClane, so he doesn't trust that. B, I think also his men are kind of smoking. They're probably drinking, so they're a little inebriated. So telling them to go out in a wing to fight McClane after they thought they did their job, you know? They got to the airport. They're all, like, smoking and drinking down the back of the plane. So to have, like, to be like, all right, sober up. You got to fight McClane on the wing of a plane. Be like, what? So I feel like, and I also feel like the third option is both Stewart and Major, they want some mano-a-mano combat. Especially, Major Grant's been playing friend to McClane for so long. He's probably like, yeah, I was next to him. Like, I do want to fight him. Like, I watched him, like, take out some of your men. And obviously, Colonel Stewart's like, I've been tag cheating all night, baby. I'm ready to roll. So I think it's a little bit of that. It's a little bit A, B, and C of why these two are first to unbuckle their seats and not even dress their own men about it. They're not even telling them. Because, like, the other guys are just like, you can see them in the back. They're just kind of moseying on by themselves. They're smoking, they're drinking. And at no point do they even look at, like, Colonel Stewart and Major Grant. Like, where are they going? Where are they going on the wing of the plane? They're oblivious to the fact that, like, their officers are about to, like, you know, fight a guy out on the wing.
Right. Well, we'll get there in a second. We're not there yet. So
I'm excited.
I know you're excited, and I'm glad that you're excited, and it's great. That's the way I want my guests to feel. I want them to be excited.
I will sit back and let you narrate.
No, you're doing a great job, Dave. Don't worry about it. It's fine. But no, but I was thinking that maybe one of the reasons that Grant is doing this because Grant is sick of playing the charade, and he's like, okay, it's McClane. I'm gonna now let McClane know who I really am. You know, he only thought he knew who I was, and now I'm going to go out there and I'm going to show him, you know, that type of thing. And then Esperanza says something really, really strange. He goes, this time do it right. Okay. But he's saying that to Grant. You know, if he's saying it in general, it sort of makes sense because he knows that Stewart tried to kill McClane already two times or three times even. So he's okay, let's give him another chance. But he says it to Grant, and, you know, have they updated Grant on everything that's happened? You know, it's like, okay, guess what? McClane got into the FM1 and used the ejector seat and survived. Okay, McClane somehow was on a snowmobile that exploded and did an evil Knievel jump, and he still survived. You know, so this time
survived live gunfire when they did the duel.
That's
and
right.
He survived that too. So it's like he survived them shooting him three or four times with MP5
with real bullets.
Auto.
That's right.
Real bullets, dodged it, you know, doesn't die from that, does the leap over the truck on the highway, and yes, somehow doesn't die there. So I think it's him. He's yelling at Grant because now that they're together, it's kind of like the chain of command. Right. The general is telling the major that you and the colonel are like, you know, is it major above colonel? I don't remember
the rank. No, colonel's above major. Major says, I always think of it from Stratego. If you think of Stratego, so a colonel is a 3 and a major is a 4 because the two is a general and 1 is a marshal.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
So that's how I always remember how ranks go, because then you got 5 as a captain, 6 as a lieutenant, 7 is a sergeant, 8 is a scout. Oh, sorry, 8 is a minor, a mine detector, and 9 is the scout. Yeah. That's and then you got the spy. Okay.
So when he says I taught him everything he knows, when you got to that scene, what does that mean? It means that
Grant was his superior at some point, and and therefore Stuart somehow surpassed him, because Grant was staying there. You know, okay. Grant basically wanted to continue running Blue Light or whatever it is. You know, which makes sense.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, so he didn't want a promotion to do a desk job, because basically from what we can infer is that Stuart was doing a desk job because he became somewhat of a politician. I mean, he's supposed to be Oliver North.
True.
Okay. And at the beginning, you mentioned yesterday about the, you know, that at the beginning they show the news reports. So in the news reports, they show footage of Stuart next to Esperanza as they are signing agreements.
Yes.
You know, they're signing some sort of treaty or whatever it is, you know.
That's true. Yeah.
So yeah, it's just that makes sense from that perspective. And then Stuart turns to Esperanza and says, "You just get us in the air, General. You're the only man who can do it." So I have a few problems with this line. First is, you know, we are both about to go out on the wing. Get us up in the air. No. Wait until we come back in the plane. Let us, you know, get this bug off the windshield and then take off. You know, not to say you get us in the air. And then the fact that he says you're the only man who can do it, you know, is that poor planning also, that there's not a single other guy who knows how to fly?
Yeah, I mean, that's what the weirdest thing about it is, that like General must have told him weeks ago, I will fly the plane, and they said, all right, like that's it. Like, we're not gonna invest any more worry about the plane. We'll just make sure we get a plane and we'll make sure General, and like that's it, like General will fly us out. So they were kind of
you need to have a plan B for that type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I just recently,
for these guys that had many plans, yeah.
Right. I recently watched We Were Soldiers, you know, with Mel Gibson, right? And one of Mel Gibson when he was still normal, I guess you can say. And in that movie, one of the things that they talk about, and it's a movie about Vietnam, it's one of the first major battles of Vietnam, and when he's training his men, he tells them, every single one of them, you are to learn the job of the person immediately above you, so that if they get killed, you can take over their thing. So, I mean, that's a great way to look at it from a military perspective, that, okay, everyone needs to be able to have multiple jobs that they can do. I mean, the jobs that all of Stuart's men here, they're not very good shots, okay, because they miss just about every single time, which is why McClane is still alive. Okay, that's first of all. And, you know, their training must be in taking over small airports or something like that, because this is where they get the skills to run the, you know, all of the air control stuff. You know, I don't know what other skills they have. Okay. So John Leguizamo, his skill is welding, right?
It's Leguizamo. You gotta juice it. It's Leguizamo.
Leguizamo. Leguizamo. Merda.
Leguizamo. Yeah.
Merda. Merda de puta. So.
You know what's so weird is that they dubbed over him and stuff. They thought they told him it was too short. And I was like, if you step back and realize you're casting a small Spanish man that knows Spanish in a group of white American soldiers whose whole job is to infiltrate and bust up the commies in South America. He's the perfect guy.
That's right.
He's a guy who's not going to stand down.
Yeah, I think Miller's the one who stands out.
Yeah, it's like you put him in a coca farmer shirt. He's going to talk Spanish and like he's going to infiltrate all the drug cartel and commie like infiltration things. All these are like the rest of these guys are like tall white boy farmers and yeah, two black guys. It's like you're the ones going to stand out. You guys all look like you came off of right from Fort Bragg, you idiots. Like John's the one who actually looks the part. It's just funny. Like it's just something that it's totally short-sighted, and I'm glad Leguizamo's had a great career post this, because it's a shame that like they wasted the fact that he was there and they could have did something with his character and they squandered it.
Yeah, but he always gets to say I was in Die Hard 2. There you go.
Oh yeah. Oh, I love when Leguizamo talks about like being in other films and like he loves, like you can tell he loves breaking balls on sets. So I love when he tells his anecdotes about working on films. Like I said, we'll get to one of those movies later this week that I think you know if I'm talking about. He loves telling a couple stories about when he was on in the film.
Yes, yes. I know exactly what you're talking about.
As you said, the guy on the way on the plane.
So, again, it doesn't make sense that he's the only one who knows how to fly. You know, you got to have a spare. So, again, you know, and then O'Reilly is good at painting. You know, O'Reilly's Robert Patrick. You know, it's like, what else? Yeah. What are these skills that these guys have? Because again, they can shoot SWAT guys, but they miss everything else. You know, so I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a little strange. You know,
when it comes to infiltration, I think Gruber's men are better at it than Stewart's men.
I don't know. Franco and Heinrich didn't do such a good job of taking out John when they walked into the boardroom, you know. So
no,
I don't know.
No, I meant to say Simon Gruber. Simon Gruber. Those guys.
Oh, okay.
Simon Gruber's guys are good. They're good infiltration. They say it's raining dogs and cats.
I was gonna say, except for talking about dogs and cats, they're good. That was exactly what I was gonna say.
It's on Detective Otto. Yeah. Yeah, and they don't know the lottery numbers. Other than that, though,
and they're also going to get in the lift, you know.
Yeah, get to the lift. Yes. Oh my God. Oh Whoa. Man. It's reverse a Glorious Bastards scene. It's like these Germans that like slip up, like Americans like slip up. We're like, no, I know you're German. I know you're European. It's a day's long. I got your ass.
It's very true. Very true. So yeah. And then as they're walking out of the room, Esperanza says to them, don't shoot. The wing is fully fueled. Hello. Don't they know that already? You know, like, why do they need to be told? I mean, it's, I guess it's good to remind them, but I think it's the same
reason he just said, don't mess up. Esperanza is having a very long night. He thought, I mean, like, as the general, I'm sure he took a lot of responsibility in making sure the plan was good. And so to be in fact like, okay, he got wounded by John, but he's like, you know, I'm gonna land this plane. I'm gonna get out of my military uniforms. Then some cop shoots me, busts my plan of escape. You can't kill him several times, and now it's like he's jammed my wing. He's just like, I've had a night, and all I needed you guys to do was kill this one cop. This one, he's probably, think about all the time General Esperanza has dealt with like local cops in Valverde. He's probably like, I either pay them off or I kill them. Simple as that. You guys can't do it. This one guy, you know where he is. It's like he's hiding. He like comes out of the sewer grate. You just shoot him, and he's just like, I'm so mad at you. Hey, by the way, the wing also is full of fuel, so can you not shoot the wing of the plane? That's all I ask of you.
Exactly.
So I think it's just Esperanza being that, like, I've never had to deal with this nonsense in Valverde. I come into D.C., you guys can't handle one cop. I don't get this.
Right, but I mean, one of the things that...
The guy doesn't even have a jacket right now.
That's true. And one of the things that we talked about earlier, which you might not be aware of, is the fact that there's also a little bit of a discrepancy as to what Esperanza knows about the plan. He doesn't know the whole plan because he was shocked when Grant and his men showed up at the church. So he didn't know
Oh.
that these guys are with them.
Okay. Yeah.
You know,
Yeah, I
so he might not also
he's
know
never
about
met Grant.
the change in with the bullets. He might not know all of those things. You know,
You are right. You're
I
right.
think he left the planning to Stuart, and Stuart, you know, and the recruitment to Stuart.
Yeah.
You know, but
So
then
you're
again,
right. He probably was out of a couple of like.
all right, then again, you know, you think he'd be a little surprised that, you know, when he shows up and there's five guys that are left alive, you know, and isn't curious where, you know, maybe they have another, you know, 12 guy or 11 guys, because you can't really count Telford.
Imagine, oh no, dude, imagine when he was back at the church before Grant's men showed up, and he was like, "Did you have more men?" Like he goes to one of the guys, like, "Did you have more men in your squad?" Like, "Yeah, they were taken out tonight, oh, by the police." Like, it was like this one cop, and he's like, "There's a one cop," and like, "Was that the guy who shot me?" That's the guy who's been taken. He's just like, you know, like General Esperanza is holding his arm, getting bandaged up, and he's like, or he's probably talking like Osama, because like Osama's bandaging him
That's
up,
right.
and he's like, "Did you guys have more men?" Why when I last saw you? He's like, "Oh yeah, we lost some guys. They all got killed by this one cop." Wait, the same cop that shot me and then ejected out of the plane when we tried to blow it up? Yeah, that's the guy.
Yeah.
This Bronson's is like, I can't believe it. He's just kind of like, is this plan gonna fail? He's probably sitting there with bleeding, like, is this plan gonna fail? And that's what he says, like the soldiers are here. And he's like, what? Don't worry, we have a plan. Okay, fine, Stuart. I don't know what's going on tonight. This is a mierda. He's just like,
Exactly.
yikes.
He's been saying that all night. No,
So yeah,
but
that's what the plan is. They're very tired at the.
it could be that the response that they'll give to Esperanza is okay, so it's that, you know, everyone gets a larger cut. You know, same thing with Gruber, you know, with Hans. You know,
Yeah.
when they lost men, so everyone's share, you know, goes up, or at least Hans's share goes up, because I doubt he was splitting it evenly with everybody. You know, he was probably
Yeah,
saying
I
to each of
mean,
them, all right,
here's my
here's
question.
$100,000 to each
Yeah.
of you, know, whatever it is.
I feel like Major Grant gets, he asks for one lump sum and then he just kind of distributes it amongst his men. Because imagine, his men didn't work nearly as hard as Colonel Stewart's men did tonight. Like, his men literally walked back and forth in the security conference room and back and forth to the pilot's briefing room. And then they did the little shootout and that's it.
That's right.
Like, you know, they
Well,
had it
they found
easy.
that huge box that Miller somehow put in the you know, in the luggage area.
Oh yeah, well I mean they probably knew where to look, yeah, because they're like, yeah, we, you know. So I mean they had that planned where it's like, okay, when we do that, we're gonna lose some of the information contact to the tower, but at the same time it's fine because we're now on to like the extraction part of the plan. So you know, the fact that we still cut their power, like they still, that's the problem, right? Is that Dulles still can't control the planes. They can only tell them we're being taken over, but because of the C4 in the church, they can't go in
Right.
there.
Well,
And
in the script,
because
the
they cut the
C4
power.
was real, and the church blew up. So,
Which is funny how like that doesn't happen. Like I thought it's like maybe they just say it wasn't cost effective because it's like we're gonna have another explosion with
right. That's the
the
conclusion,
bike in
that
a second.
Travis and I came to that conclusion last week, that it was the probably for the because of the budget that they didn't blow it up.
But I think it's good because it gives Major Grant's men an excuse to keep everyone back for longer
Right.
because it's like you don't want to approach it because you don't want to be the guy that accidentally blows up the
Right.
church. So they're kind of like, well, we're gonna have to wait for the real bomb squad to show up, and Major Grant's men leave. So it's just a bunch of like, it's a bunch of Dulles Airport police being like, yeah, I'm not crossing that picket fence, no way.
That's right.
So that's it does it stalls it. Where if it's like if the church blows up, then they will realize, okay, the church blew up. Now we can start looking at all the piping systems and electronics around it.
Right.
But if you have the bomb there, the tension is that we can't enter it, and that stalls because that's more planes that are not going to be able to
Right.
land.
That's true. So at this point, then Grant and Stewart leave the cockpit, and they go down a flight of stairs, towards the door to the airplane, and they pass all their men, as you mentioned earlier today, you know, and nobody bats an eye. Nobody's like, where are you guys going, and why did you just open up the door, you know, to the emergency exit, you know, that type of thing. Nobody cares. You know, I guess you don't question your superiors in those situations. You know, and then we get a quick shot of Esperanza again, who looks pretty nervous as to what's going on. And then Grant looks out through the peephole window of the emergency exit, and he sees the jacket and decides to open the door. You know, and then, you know, he gets out, and, you know, it's I don't know, it's just very strange. It looks very heavy for him to open the door. And you'd think that these doors are made so that anyone can really open them up. You know, you have flight attendants and maybe passengers on planes and stuff like that need to open these things in emergency situations. So, like, why would they make it seem so heavy for him to open it? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably purposely going slower now. Because, yeah, it's like, well, I don't want my own men falling off the wing of the plane. They can't see McClane, so they could be like, he could have also fell off. So they're kind of like, he might be gone, so all we have to do is just get the decode on. So he probably slows the plane down to probably like 20 miles per hour right now. I assume right now they just think that McClane probably fell off after he put his jacket.
Because
it got too cold, so he probably like, he kind of got blown off.
Could be.
But it's so funny how, like, somehow McClane is, you're going to find out he's hiding.
Yeah, we don't know where he's hiding. I was just about to say that because Grant, like, jumps down onto the wing, and then out of nowhere, John jumps from behind him. So I don't know where John was really hiding. Maybe he was hiding where, like, when you open the door, he would be behind it. But in order to jump, he would need to be a little elevated. You know, I don't think he would, at the same plane, be able to jump on him. So I don't know. It's a little strange. Yeah, he comes out of nowhere.
If he didn't come out of like nowhere, Stewart would have just shot him right in the back. And then like, all right, that's it.
That's right.
Done. Because he would have been like right there on the side of the door. He'd be like, oh, I'm not shooting at the wing. I'm shooting at, you know.
Right. I mean, John comes from like the left-hand side when he jumps on him.
Yeah.
So, and I have no idea where that is because, you know, when we see Grant come out of the door, so he opens the door up to the right. And so John is, you know, out of camera shot on the left somewhere, but I have no idea where he jumps from. Absolutely no clue. So he jumps on him and knocks him over. And Stewart then, stands in the entrance of the door and lifts up his gun a little bit. And then John starts the fight with Grant and he punches Grant in the face and Grant falls down as if he just got like the wind beaten out of him just by John. And as he's basically falling down, that's the end of this minute. You know, we'll get a little bit more of a fight tomorrow between the two of them. And I do like the
tight.
I do like the fact that they have decided they still are, you know, doing a good job with the red and blue tape on the ammo clips because Stewart is standing there with the red ammo clip, which is what he should be having. So that works.
Yes.
You know, They did a nice job with the continuity on that perspective. So I like that. And that's pretty much how this minute ended. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
No. Tell me if there's any little details they missed in the script they didn't put in the movie.
All right, great. So the script, again, as I mentioned yesterday, most of the script this week is just very descriptive. It does start off with Esperanza swearing, and he says, Merde. And then Stewart says, what? And then he goes, the airline. Something's wrong. We can't take off. He looks out the window and reacts to the hydraulics groaning because McClane is jamming his jacket into the groove where it hinges. And then it says, they can't believe this. Then Grant stands up and says, I'll do him. Stewart then says to Esperanza, you just get us in the air, General. You're the only one who can do it. Stewart and Grant cock their weapons and move to the door. Grant opens it. Exterior on the wing, Grant stands there, wind whipping him. No McClane, just the jacket, flapping in the groaning airlon. Grant starts out, wham! McClane appears from behind the door, trips him. Grant's gun bounces off the wing, falls to the ground, rushing past below. So, you know, he doesn't make the comment in the script about the whole idea of don't shoot because the wing is filled with bullets. Sorry, the wing is filled with fuel.
Fuel,
not bullets.
And don't shoot with your bullets.
They don't want it filled with bullets. They want it filled with fuel. So yeah, it's I like the added touch that they add that in the movie just to say it, you know, because it just doesn't work as well in the script where it isn't mentioned, you know, except for the fact that, you know, they go out there with their guns and the reason that John doesn't get shot by Grant is because he's able to knock Grant's gun off of him and the gun falls down onto the snow. So I don't know. It's a little strange. But that's all we have for the script for today. Every Tuesday, I have a segment called Disaster Tuesday, where basically what I do is I tell a little tale of some airplane disaster that happened and that is related in some way to some famous person that we all might know. So what I chose for you, or for this week, is... Do you know who, well, actually, you probably know who it is. Do you know who Audie Murphy is? Was.
Audie Murphy?
Audie Murphy. Not Eddie.
No,
not,
I'm sorry.
Not Eddie Murphy. Audie
Murphy. You got me.
Okay, so Audie Murphy was actually he was a soldier, and then he became an actor. He was a soldier during World War II. He became the most decorated American combat soldier of World War II. They have a movie about him also called The Hell and Back, where he actually plays himself. He received the Medal of Honor at the age of 19 for holding off an entire company of German soldiers for an hour during a battle. So he became an actor afterwards. He was in a whole bunch of different movies, and he became very famous. And he ended up becoming the CEO of a company. And on the 28th of May, 1971, he was on a private plane where he was a passenger that they were flying north of Roanoke, Virginia. And it was there was a lot of rain and clouds and fog and zero visibility. And the plane ended up crashing and killing all five people on board, the pilot plus the four of them, the four passengers. It took them 3 days to actually locate the plane and know what had happened. He ended up being buried in Arlington.
Where did the plane crash?
It crashed 14 miles northwest of Roanoke. It crashed into the side of a mountain.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and when they were trying to find out what happened, so they basically attested it to the fact that there was near zero visibility and that the pilot, even though he was a trained pilot, he wasn't trained well enough in that particular plane that he was flying. And so, you know, he was buried in Arlington Cemetery. His grave site is the second most visited grave site at Arlington. Whose do you think is the most visited grave? You have a guess?
Is it JFK?
Yes, it is.
Buried
yeah,
there?
JFK.
Okay.
Yep. JFK, right.
Did you talk about their season? Did you talk about Emilio Carranza?
Doesn't sound familiar.
Top of your head, you don't remember? The reason I bring it up is because we're talking about plane crashes, essentially.
Yeah.
He was a Mexican pilot in the 20s, I believe, and he did this Goodwill flight from Mexico City to D.C., and apparently they do it every year. And in 1928, I think a storm or something threw him off, and he crashed in the middle of the Pine Barrens in New Jersey. And it took a while for them to find it because in the 20s, like, the Pine Barrens were legit, were just that. And I think they eventually found the plane, and they had to dig a road, cut trees and dig a road out to him so they could get his body remains and his plane. And now there's a memorial there.
In Tabernacle.
Out in the middle of the Pine Barrens.
Yeah.
In Tabernacle, exactly.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
interesting.
So,
see, I'm also originally from Jersey, so I'm, you know, when
that is true.
And you know, you mentioned you know, Cherry Hill yesterday, so I'm familiar with Cherry Hill. You know, I grew up in Lakewood. You know, was born in Toms River, which I actually found out that the hospital that I was born in, which my mother was also born in that same hospital, Paul Campbell Hospital, was the hospital where they took everyone from the Hindenburg accident. You know, I was like,
oh,
yeah, that was just like, yeah. That was like crazy when I heard that, you know. So, yeah. Right. So, you see, we got to talk about two different crashes today. He was the Lindbergh of Mexico. Emilio Carranza was the Lindbergh of Mexico. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, so, yeah, I was actually surprised. I didn't know that Audie Murphy died in a plane crash. But unfortunately, you know, as we've learned through this entire season, there are a lot of famous people who didn't really know were, you know, that died in plane crashes.
I mean, I remember when JFK Jr., I was at a buddy's house, and we were up in the morning. We're playing, like, Tony Hawk. And I just remember his dad came in and was like, hey, I got to put the TV on. We're like, what? He's like, I got to put the TV on. We're like, okay. We're like, all right, mister. And my friend's dad, like, you know, we turn up the PlayStation. He puts on the TV, and it's, like, the search for JFK Jr.'s plane. Like, we just got word that – I remember we were kind of, like, sitting – it was kind of, like, the sobering moment, really, and like. I was like, I guess I'll just call my dad and Alex, I'll catch you around later. We're all like, we just like woke up, we're having fun. And then it's like, and then we remember, and then they kept playing clips of like him, there's a JFK Jr. after his father, you know, was shot. And they're like, we're not sure where he is in his plane. So I remember that.
Yeah.
We were being there like when the news was reporting that. So yeah, there are some moments where I do remember like those little times when there was a plane crash.
Yeah, no, right. We'll actually talk about JFK Jr. In the future. We're not there yet.
Okay.
He's being saved for a guest of mine from Boston, who you probably know who it is.
Ooh.
So, you know, he'll be on in 2 weeks, I believe. So, yeah.
All right, looking forward to that. Good.
Yeah. Well, I don't know which one wants to look forward to hearing stories about plane disasters, but yeah. I understand.
Okay,
it's
on the feed. I'm scrolling my feed and I see something,
yes.
And you say it. Hey, today's
episode. No, you're right.
All right,
you're right.
I will.
You're right. You're right.
I'll take a little gander.
There you go.
I'll let my fingers do the walking.
That is true. That is true. All right. So, Dave, you want to tell people where they can find you?
Yes. Yeah, so, as I was saying yesterday, 5 Minutes of Mystery. That's my podcast where I talk about Mystery Men. I think it's my favorite comic book movie from 1999. It was a little, some of its jokes were just ahead of the time when it came to superhero stuff. So if you haven't heard that, I'd love for you to check out the feed and listen to that. Other than that, I'll say this. Yeah, me and my podcast partner, Sean German, a couple years ago, we finished up Groundhog Minute, and we went over the movie Groundhog Day 1 minute at a time. And we surprisingly, for a movie that likes to repeat itself, we got into a lot of interesting theories about just theology and one's like existence of time. So there's some really good discussions I really like that we did. And that was, gosh, that was 2015, 2016. It's very, very long ago now.
Oh, wow. Yes. These time flies when you're talking about movies minute by minute.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. Or you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay tomorrow, if there is one.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and